I have directed Secretary Connally to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar into gold or other reserve assets.
Where is the gold?
This is the Gold News of the Podcast, folks. Fergus Hodgson, your host. Thank you for tuning in. And if you'd like more precious metals, mining, economic freedom, please do hit that subscribe button. We'd love to have you stay with us. Also, go to goldnewsletter.com /podcast for our archives. You can also get newsletters there. We are taking on a serious and long-term topic, one which is not going away anytime soon, and this is the transition to electric vehicles, okay, and what that entails. We've got a specialist, Andrew Miller, from the UK, now in Florida. He is the COO of Benchmark Minerals, which is a market intelligence firm devoted pretty much exclusively to lithium-ion batteries and everything that goes into them. Andrew, welcome to the Gold News Letter podcast. It's a privilege to have you with us.
Thanks very much for having me, Fergus. Good to be here.
Right on. And as I mentioned before we started recording, this is a contentious issue here in the United States because many of us suspect we don't really know how to measure this, that a great deal of this electric vehicle market is the consequence of policies, subsidies, or whatever, tax breaks, I don't really know, but favorable treatment. If we just were to ignore all this, how much of a switch to electric vehicles would be happening? Do we have any kind of gauge of that?
Yeah, I think when you talk about the push towards electrification in the transportation sector, it's easy to get led by what's happening at a policy level. But if you look at actually the history of the build out of the electric vehicle market, it's very much today actually led by industry. So what something really monumental that happened back in 2014 was, of course, Elon Musk announcing that Tesla were going to build this gigafactory, a huge battery production facility, basically trying to make battery production the size of the global market at that point under one roof. So it was a massive, ambitious project. But what that really did, beyond just give them a stake in the supply chain itself for their electric vehicles, is it sparked, you know, what we call a battery arms race. And this arms race is taking place in industry. So if you want to remain competitive in the transportation market, what you're seeing is every major OEM is doubling down on electrifying their fleets going forward. So yes, there is policy momentum, undoubtedly. You've seen that in China for more than a decade now, which has really led the way in the electric vehicle build out. You're seeing it start to take place in Europe, and you're certainly with the Inflation Reduction Act seeing a huge amount of policy momentum in the US as well now. But I think you can't miss that multi-billions of dollars now have been committed to, and I'd argue almost some companies have maybe bet their businesses in some way on moving their fleet to electric vehicles. If you look at the targets for your VWs of the world, GMs, Fords, your major automotive brands are now tying themselves and have tied themselves to electric vehicles. So this is happening. Policy will help it and make it happen at a faster pace. But this is a transformational shift in the transportation market.
And what is the big value proposition, aside from environmental friendliness, you might say, what is the value proposition of moving to electric or battery over combustion?
So the case for the push towards electrification is definitely based around that environmental footprint and improving that. And as we discussed earlier, that has far-reaching consequences beyond just putting an electric vehicle on the road. But I think when you look at the technology development that's happening around the automotive sector at the moment and the fine-tuning of vehicles for specific applications to make them more efficient in what they're made to do on the road, a huge amount of that R&D spend, that commitment from automotive companies has been based around this shift towards electric. So whether it's by necessity or whether it's by just the direction that automotive companies have taken due to those pushes to become more environmentally friendly, whichever way it's occurred, a lot of that technological shift, and if you look at where the most of the competition around future transportation is shifting, it is around electric. So that's where the automotive companies are really focusing their attentions.
And how long will we wait, or will the delay be, or maybe it's already here? How long will it take before the performance is basically equal in terms of the usability, convenience, you know, duration, whatever it might be? Have we already reached that stage where the vehicles coming out are basically equivalent or even better?
Yeah, so absolutely. The lithium-ion battery, which is, of course, the central component to an electric vehicle, the performance improvements that have been made over the past 10, 20 years now in terms of improving the energy density, how much energy you can pack in to that battery, have really put electric vehicles to a comparative level, certainly in some cases better than your ICE vehicles. Now, the biggest area, aside from just the basic performance, is, of course, being able to build those batteries and being able to build them at a cost that is competitive. And that's the point where you're going to see over the next 5 years or so, we believe that you will see batteries start to compete in terms of the cost of bringing those vehicles to the market will be very competitive with combustion engine vehicles. So we are at that point right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So basically your view is, or assessment is, that the performance is there. It's just the cost effectiveness. Now, how will firms, producers, miners, whoever's in the process here, achieve that cost effectiveness? Will it be from the components, the manufacturing, economies of scale?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. So to date, if you look since that 2014 announcement of the Gigafactory, and you fast forward to where we are today, a huge amount of those cost improvements have been around economies, right? We're going to build more batteries, we'll build them at much larger scale, and in turn will improve the performance. All of those economies have really been driving the cost improvements. The point we're at today, and an interesting challenge the industry is faced with at the moment, is that because we've squeezed so many of those economies of scale out of the cost of your battery, we're now at a point where the leading cost driver for a battery is the raw materials that go into it. It's no longer the labor, the energy. It's the raw materials that are the majority of the cost. And that's a wide range of different raw materials. But what you're then leaving yourself susceptible to is, as we've seen in the case of lithium, for example, this year, which is, of course, a very key component to a lithium-ion battery, lithium has gone through a major price spike. And as a result, driving down the cost of those batteries, and we estimate this year will be the first time in history that we've seen actually the average cost of a lithium-ion battery go up rather than come down. We've been used to this continually decreasing curve in terms of battery costs. But now volatility in raw material markets is meaning that that is not necessarily a destiny that is destined to continue forever. So a lot has to go into controlling your raw material input costs. And for that reason, a huge amount of what you're seeing at the moment and will continue to see over the next decade is automotive companies or the downstream users of these batteries starting to take a stake further up the supply chain so that they can control their costs from raw materials.
So is lithium the only ingredient that's spiked in cost?
So lithium's been the most notable example. We've seen at points this year, I've seen nickel turbulence in the nickel market. Past couple of years, I've seen cobalt. What's important about a lithium-ion battery is it really is just a mix of different critical minerals and metals to affect. We're not talking about the most important ingredients in a lithium-ion battery aren't your big bulk commodities of today. They're actually quite niche specialist chemical industries in a lot of cases, which are going to face significant challenges in scaling. So for that reason, we've seen points even in the past 3, 4, 5 years where each of these markets has struggled to meet the relatively moderate demand growth that the industry's seen. When we try and look forward and look at where these industries are going over the next 5 or 10 years, of course, those demand projections are much, much higher. And it means that these industries are going to have to scale at an unprecedented level. So lithium is the most obvious example. But as I say, you've seen it in cobalt, you've seen it in nickel, and you've seen signs of that even right through to your graphite, manganese, some of your secondary inputs into a battery as well.
Yeah. And as you say, there's an incredible amount of inertia behind this. It would be hard to just say, oh, this is just too expensive, we're not going to do it now.
Well, you know, you look at the roadmap of an automotive company, and typically they know what they're putting on the road sort of 5 years out. Yeah. Right? So at that point, the models that are coming in the next 2 to 3 years, which all of them have stated, you know, you and I living in the US will be familiar looking at our TVs and seeing every other advert or commercial is something, you know, focused on a new electric vehicle coming to market from a major automotive company. Those have been in the planning for 3, 4, 5 years. You're not shifting that trajectory for what type of vehicles are hitting the road over the next few years. So really, the industry knows which direction it's going. We now have this compounding effect from the policy momentum that you're seeing in the enter the market at the moment. So yeah, you're not moving. It's really the challenge for the supply chain is how quickly can we ramp? This demand isn't going away. It's just how much might it be deferred or delayed if we can't scale the supply chain at the rate required.
The Gold Newsletter is proudly sponsored by Inventa Capital Corporation, a venture capital advisory firm dedicated to the acquisition and development of assets in the natural resource sector. Today, Inventa is one of the premier mining groups with a first-rate portfolio of companies and a world-class team.
This is the Inventa Capital Mining Update. I've got Chris Donaldson of Tin One Resources with me. That's tin1.ca. They're on the Toronto Venture Exchange at TORC or over the counter at OTCQ, no, over the counter TORCF. And they've got a few projects in Australia, specifically in Tasmania, the Great Pyramid Project. And Chris has just returned from Australia. So what is the latest on the ground?
Yeah, well, hey, thanks for having me, Fergus, here. Yeah, it was pretty exciting. Good to get down there. Second time I've now been to site. First of all, the market in Australia is quite a bit more positive than it has been up here in North America. So that was good. We were attending a conference beforehand and then managed to get over to site with a few people. And impressed with what we saw. We still have one drill going at Great Pyramid. If you remember, we have about a 5,000 meter program that we've been executing on for the last 6 months. We've released about 3,500 meters worth of assays and so on. The goal of the drilling program at Great Pyramid. Great Pyramid, of course, has a historical resource on it, 10,000 contained tons at 0.2%. So, 0.2% for, what would likely be an open pit operation is pretty good grade, but 10,000 tons is a bit small. So our goal is first to, confirm the historical resource, but also test laterally and at depth. A couple weeks ago, we released our last batch of results, and they continue to exceed what we were hoping for there. Managed to find the big hole was a deeper hole that found mineralization around 150 meters. So the original resource went from surface down to only about 40 meters. So now we're seeing mineralization three times deeper, which is fantastic. And if you remember the results just before that, we hit our best hole. We had almost 80 meters at 0.51% tin, including 23% at over 23 meters at over 1%. So 80 meters at 0.51, that's double the depth and 2.5 times the grade. So we're hitting on everything. We're just wrapping up the last deep drill hole now, and then of course there's always a bit of a lag before you get the assays back, but we'll get those and start putting out more releases in the next month or two, and then see if we have enough there to update the resource, which we hope to be able to do in the early new year.
Great, mate. So basically more information, more data coming out very soon, and you referred to more optimism down under, and also since we last spoke there has been somewhat more positive news just for tin more broadly. So what is the industrial demand pushing that?
Yeah, so I mean, if you go back 3 years, first of all, there's a structural deficit in tin. We're just not producing enough to meet demand. The main driver is solder, which is the glue that holds all electrical parts together, semiconductors and solar panels and batteries. It's the glue that holds the batteries together, right? And that the forecast long term is is very, very positive and expected to grow 2 to 4% a year for the next decade or so. But the issue is more on the supply side. So two and a half years ago, you were seeing the squeeze and the price went from, you know, below 20,000 a ton to an all-time high of 50,000 a ton, peaking last March. And that's just simply because of the supply-demand fundamentals. But what did happen is China, which is a net importer, you know, their factories and because of COVID, you know, slowed down. So they had excess supply. They flooded the market. And we saw an epic collapse, you know, and that coincided with obviously our share price as well. So we went from 50,000 down to under 17,000 per ton in an 8-month period. So it's a wild, wild swing. Thankfully, in beginning of November, inventory levels have come way down and China is now importing again and we've seen a rebound. So it's gone from under 17,000 to almost 24,000 per ton right now. So that's a, you know, 40% bounce back in 5 weeks. And hopefully we'll be able to resume that long-term trend, which is very, very positive. You know, we haven't quite seen the effect on the equities yet, but you know, as if it continues on this run, hopefully we see the rush back into tin that we saw last year when the tin market was very, very exciting.
When you say the equities are just, let's say, waiting to absorb that, is it just because it's a less efficient market, a smaller market, or what do you think, they're less swept? Yeah.
I mean, a couple of things. I mean, one, the tin market is not like copper, which is massive, right? Tin market is very, very small. It trades, you know, $1 million a day across all the tin equities. And so, you know, it's good and bad. You know, when it catches a bid, you get very good leverage. And we saw that last year. But you know, you need to get that flow coming in. I think people are looking to see, okay, is this going to be a sustained rally? And then, you know, and if they want to play and add a bit of tin into their portfolios, generally they start at the producers and get down to us developer explorers. And inflows are starting with the producers and hopefully, that'll move down. I mean, we joined the International Tin Association. We're one of 10 explorer developers out there. So if anybody. These battery metal funds or people want to have some exposure to tin, there are very few companies. You know, like anything, a rising tide floats all boats. So hopefully that'll catch on here in the new year.
And so, yeah, you mentioned the Great Pyramid, which is maybe your flagship right now, but you've got a couple of others. Do you want to comment on their status?
Yeah, so we have two other projects. One's called Aberfoyle. This is a district that is a historical producer, produced over 2 million tons of tin underground at about 1%, but hasn't seen any modern exploration since it was shuttered in the 80s. And in at that time, they were chasing these big high-grade veins. Didn't really have a lot of planning. So we're doing an extensive soil survey and mapping, and the goal on that is to see the extent of the known veins and also discover some new targets, so that once we update our resource and are kind of done with this initial program at Great Pyramid, we'll be ready to go over at Aberfoyle. And it's, you know, Aberfoyle, and then our third project was Rattler Range. All of them are within about an hour and a half drive of each other. Rattler Range, earlier stage, but has 42 known tin occurrences on it, very highly prospective. And we're doing the same sort of thing. So we're doing mapping and soil sampling on that as well.
Right on, folks. If you want to learn more about Chris's project with Tin One Resources, it is tinone.ca, T-O-R-C, or over the counter at T-O-R-C-F. If you'd like to include it in your portfolio. Otherwise, Chris, thanks for your time. I look forward to our next chat.
Yeah, it sounds good. Thanks, Fergus.
There's just immense pressure for this to happen, for there to be more cost-effective lithium-ion batteries or whatever other materials, if there are alternatives, to go into electric vehicles. Now, is it just electric vehicles? Are there other, let's say, transitioning, I guess, related industries?
Yeah, so I'd say, you know, what we say about the lithium-ion battery and why we focus our attention on the lithium-ion batteries at Benchmark is we class those lithium-ion batteries as a platform technology. It's not about the batteries themselves. They're not, of course, energy generation. They're about storing that energy. So why lithium-ion is so important in transportation is it's light. That's why you don't have much diversification of technology around transportation, because you need to be able to pick up those batteries just as we have them in our iPhones or in our tablets or whatever it is. That's the battery of choice because it's light. You can pick it up and you can move it around. What all the improvements in cost and performance of lithium-ion batteries have actually done is they've opened up new markets where you don't actually have to move that battery around. It's not essential to move the battery. But if you can store energy very effectively with wind, with solar, with other types of renewables, then it ultimately unlocks the potential of some of those other areas of energy generation, even plugging into the existing grid and dealing with some of that that load shifting, you know, when demand hits the grid. So there's a huge array of different applications, from your phone right through to, like I say, grid scale storage for lithium ion. Transportation's at the center of it, but not necessarily the only market.
Yeah. So assuming that it happens, as the price point comes down, that could open up many other uses of this technology. Yeah.
It already is. You already see, you know, there's a huge range of examples of large scale battery storage, stationary storage projects already being built in the US, massive investment in China. So we're already at that point where you go, if we can get this energy storage right, and you can partner it with a source of energy generation, that there's some real potential in a major growth market outside just transportation.
Okay. Now, obviously, this is a financial show, and many of our investors are always thinking, how can I get a piece of this pie? So what is the quick answer than the long answer? Because my sense is a lot of this around the world will be driven by nationalized industries, if I can put it that way. How much room is there for the private investor to get involved in this EV transition?
Well, I think if you're an investor, and we don't provide investment advice, but what I would say, and where we look at some of the opportunities of where this supply chain is really going to need financing, is sort of as you go further up the supply chain. So, you know, vehicle companies, your OEMs are well known. You might have one or two, newcomers enter the market, the Teslas of the world, for example, or some of your newer Rivians and those type of companies at the electric vehicle stage. But it's a pretty closed market. It's going to be the major OEMs that dictate a lot of that demand. What happens as you work your way upstream is that actually the profile of the companies and the nature of those companies actually changes significantly. And yes, you have some big battery producers, but there's a lot of actually new battery producers coming into the industry. Similar, you know, your midstream, anode, cathode, all the components of your batteries is changing. But where we see the most, the biggest gap in this supply chain is at your raw materials. The reason for that being is, as I said, when you talk about the timeline and the period for development of each step in the supply chain, you have that sort of 5-year horizon for your automotive companies that we were talking about. And we're coming up on that when they're going to have mass scale introduction of electric vehicles to the market. But as you work upstream, you can build a new battery factory in, you know, 1, 2, 3 years. Similar with your midstream processing and refining, you can build that type of capacity relatively quickly. What you can't shift very quickly, of course, is your raw material. And what that's seeing is you don't have a number of big players in a lot of these industries that are sort of completely dominant in the market. You might have one or two major participants, the Glencores of the world, in lithium, Albemarle, SQM, are sort of some of your bigger players there. What you don't see as you look at where the expansions are taking place for raw material is that those companies are necessarily not the leading the charge. There's a lot of new developers coming into the space, newer companies that are taking, you know, greenfield projects and looking to target some of these raw material markets. And that's where the biggest gap remains at the moment, because you have such a lead time to development. So demand is coming. Demand's here in the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. When you look at that major demand growth, the supply response from a raw material perspective is where the biggest gap stands.
Yeah, you can't just create this stuff out of thin air. So we have down here in your bio that you look, yeah, I guess obviously lithium, but graphite, cobalt, and fluorspar. Forgive me, I'm not familiar with this one. So basically, we need explorers to actually find where this stuff is.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look down that list, we cover a wide range of sort of critical minerals and metals. But you have your primary minerals and metals that are the key components into a lithium-ion battery, those being your lithiums, your cobalts, your nickels, graphite, like you say, the key ingredients to an anode and cathode that makes a battery. But then you also have a number of peripheral industries, which some of your listeners may be familiar with. You know, fluorspar is, again, a bit more of a niche industry, but is a major beneficiary of some of this growth in the electric vehicle market. All of that refining, that midstream steps, even some of the components that go into your batteries require fluorspar typically through HF acid, which is used to make fluorspar. So there's an ecosystem of minerals and metals around the supply chain. It's not just the direct ingredients that go into a battery. You have to look further afield, and there's going to be opportunities across the landscape to really look at where maybe driven or where growth may be driven by what's happening in the battery sector. And it's not necessarily just that core group of key ingredients.
What about the, let's say, sophistication or effectiveness of recycling these batteries? So is this actually happening, or are we still early days in terms of being able to take them and remake them?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the upshot is we are still, unfortunately, in the early days of what's happening in recycling. That's due to, you know, a couple of reasons. You know, first of all, a lot of these ingredients until now that you can recover from your battery recycling, there haven't been a number of really high value components when you compare to the cost of taking those materials back out. It was only really your nickels, your cobalt, some of your higher cost ingredients that actually made that the economics work for recycling. There's a widespread acceptance that one, to fill the supply gap, and two, to deal with the longer term environmental consequences of building all these batteries, you need massive recycling infrastructure. The issue today is that we just don't have the scale of that recycling infrastructure. We don't also have the batteries. So there's actually, at the moment, even though you talk about all these batteries, what car companies are putting into these vehicles is actually batteries that are meant to last longer and longer over time. They're not meant to be coming out in 2 years' time. No, people want them to last 10 years, 12 years, then go into maybe secondary applications. But you actually don't have the supply to feed that recycling market necessarily today. So it's something that has to build in tandem with the industry, but we are still at the early stages of what recycling is going to have to scale to meet this type of demand.
So there's definitely, let's say, room for innovation in that space. But because we are so early in this sector, there isn't just a huge flood of these used batteries available to make it economic right now. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, mate.
I was just going to say that a lot of actually what's being recycled today isn't the batteries, it's actually all the scrap that's being, you know, as you build out these plants, quite often they're not massively in the first year or two of production. So actually that's an opportunity as well. If you can tap into some of the companies that are using that scrap and turning it into something valuable, that's a pretty good value proposition as well.
Folks, we've been chatting with Andrew Miller of benchmarkminerals.com. You can follow him on LinkedIn, also on Twitter, @Miller_BMI, and that is @Miller_benchmarkminerals. Minerals
intelligence is the
intelligence final. Okay, yeah, that was the missing ingredient there. So otherwise, mate, I will watch this space. To me, it's hard for me to process sometimes, I guess, because we just grew up with this stuff, right? We just grew up with the combustion engine, and it's just so, it's almost like gravity. It's just always been there. But there are other things that have changed a lot in my life. I have newspapers to my left here, and I'm a dinosaur and having physical print newspapers. So I get the sense that maybe I'm still, let's say, speculating, getting a sense for this, but maybe it's just the case that this is a transition, and even if people are ideologically suspicious of it, that it's just happening.
Yeah, and I think transition is the perfect word because it's not something that's going to happen overnight. Not everything's going to shift in 1 year or two. But the point I'd make and maybe leave on is that you don't need vehicles to be hitting 50%, 70% of penetration rates in the total vehicle market. You only need to see those early double digit sort of numbers hit in terms of electric vehicles before you start to see some really major consequences upstream. So this won't happen overnight, and fundamentally it can't happen overnight because you have these supply chain limitations. The challenge the industry is faced with is how do we overcome those and push that transition towards electrification to happen that bit quicker.
Okay, folks, Andrew Miller, thanks for your time. I look forward to the next time, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Fergus. Thanks very much.